Welcome to the Wags of SCI podcast, where we discuss life, love, and caregiving after spinal cord injury, hosted by Elena Pauly and Brooke Paget.
Both of our partners are quadriplegics, and after connecting online in 2017, we began the advocacy and support group Wags of SCI, which is an acronym for Wives and Girlfriends of Spinal Cord Injury.
We know firsthand the challenges that come with living this lifestyle, and our mission is to spread education, awareness, and positivity from our unique perspectives.
As each week as we tackle deep discussions around balancing life as a caregiver and a lover to someone with a spinal cord injury.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Wags of SCI podcast. Here we go. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Wags of SCI podcast. For anybody who is joining us for the very first time, this group was established in 2017 after both Brooke and Elena's partner sustained spinal cord injuries, and we sought out for some resources to help the caregivers and the partners feel support as they were the backbone of their partner's injury and help them heal and regain strength. So this podcast is here to celebrate love, life, and relationships after spinal cord injury.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We are happy that you're here with us today. This episode is going to be a lot of fun. But first, before we get into this episode, I would like to send a huge shout out to this episode's sponsors and just a little message from us. These sponsors are very important to us. We work very closely with them, and we would not be able to do the work that we do without their support, not just for us, but for the community as well. Our first sponsor is Robin Wishart of Wishart Brain and Spine Law. Robin is the official legal advocate for the Wags of SCI community, and she helps us with our own personal cases. She also works closely with us, changing some of the systems that are available for caregivers right now, and we are in the process of doing that in our own personal cases. So if you need some help or support, you know, whether it is looking into your insurance benefits paperwork, having a letter written, or finding resources in your area, please contact Robin. She knows all about this life, and she has supported us for over 4 years now. So please visit Robin's website at brainandspinelaw.com, or you can visit wagsofsci.com and click on the legal resources tab to learn more about how Robin and the Wags work together. Our second sponsor is Rolling in Paradise. Rolling in Paradise is an adaptive equipment company that is owned by a quadriplegic and his wife, Annalisa Squires. So Annalisa and John own this VA-approved business, and they service all of North America. So if you're looking for any sort of adaptive equipment or any piece of equipment that you need for your wheelchair, please visit rollinginparadise.com. We love to support quad-owned and WAG-owned businesses in this community. So if you're going to put your dollar somewhere, please give it to an American company like Rolling in Paradise. They understand this life, and they can help you a lot faster than most companies can. So rollinginparadise.com, support Annalisa and John. So what are we talking about today, Elena? What are we getting into?
Well, today we're going to share some questions that have come up to us over the course of running this podcast. We have a few questions from our community members that we would like to discuss. But before we do that, I would like to pick one card from our Cool to Connect deck of cards. So these cards are just really fun. They're from Sage Natural Wellness. They came in a pack, like, I think around Christmas. They're called Cool to Connect. So they're very random. And I have one question for you, which should get you thinking. When you lack inspiration, what do you do to inspire you?
These cards are really cool because they're kind of, you can use them as like icebreakers too. It's really cool. What do I use to get inspiration? I always, when I am feeling lack of inspiration, I always meditate and pray. And I think this is very personal and unique to every person in their spiritual life or their personal life or whatever tools you are developing in your life at this time. So it varies, but for me personally, I always go into just deep listening mode where I either listen to my body or I listen to God. And I either pray or meditate, and which is, you know, for me, kind of the same thing, where I get into a state where I'm really relaxed and calm, and I kind of wait for inspiration. And a lot of the times that doesn't come right away. It comes after getting into a more relaxed state, and just usually I don't feel inspired when I'm going too hard. I'm either trying too hard to do something, or I'm trying to control something, or I'm worried about something. That is usually when my inspiration disappears. So I try to do everything in my life that I can. And this was actually a result of what happened to me after my partner's injury, where I was kind of in a state where I was like half in, half out of like living holistically, where I was just kind of like, you know, I'm going to still keep my foot into doing things that aren't necessarily that good for me while also being healthy in other ways. And I'm going to see what happens. And then when my partner's injury happened, I kind of was like, okay, I need to go all into living in as close to alignment as I can, because my body could physically not sustain the amount of stress that I was under. And so something had to change. So ever since that, you know, 9 years ago, I've been like devoted to the path of listening and praying and self-care and trusting and surrendering and allowing. And when you're in a position of being stressed out in your body, that your inspiration stops and it feels terrible. And I know a lot of people out there can probably relate to this, but just getting to a place where you have to slow down and stop and listen and trust, that's how my inspiration returns. And it takes a lot of practice, that's for sure, and commitment. And that's how I do that. What about you, Elena?
Well, I think this is actually a really great question for anybody listening. I hope you're also taking the moment to think about this question for yourself. When you lack inspiration, what do you do to inspire you? For myself, but first, coffee. First, I have a coffee. First thing in the morning, I have a coffee. And I usually get inspired by that, especially if it's a fluffy coffee. And what do I mean by that? I like to make fluffy coffee where I take, usually we have fluffy coffees only on the weekends because they're so fun, but I literally just take my like milk and coffee and I blend it in my Vitamix or whatever and it turns fluffy. So those are that is the first thing that inspires me first thing in the morning. I like to do swims in the ocean or pottery or read a little entry from a book or sometimes just reflect back on the week that has just happened and just really zone into that. And I also find that gratitude, the very last thing I think about at night is gratitude and the things I'm grateful for. And that's literally when my head hits the pillow. Those are my last thoughts for the next morning, to feel inspired and feel great, a lot of gratitude for everything that we have, especially in this life as women who a lot of us are the quote unquote pre-injury wags of SCI, meaning that our partners were once able-bodied and we've been through, you know, the trauma of our partner sustaining an injury, which can really bring a lot of gratitude to our lives when we do a little bit of reflecting and just take a moment to look back on everything in the past year, in the past couple years, even in the past week. And the true realization that in those moments, you realize that where you are now is something that you were dreaming of maybe years ago. So you have to give yourself a bit of credit for how far you've come. And that can be extremely inspiring.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we should take a moment quickly to just have a little bit of just real talk about the amount of pushback that you and I get for having this way of life, or having the way, you know, the specific way that we've chosen to lead our lives, we get a lot of pushback in the community in various ways because of that. Because, you know, some people will say, oh, that's dreaming. You can't live like that. Look at all the tough shit that we have to go through every day. And how do you choose to be calm and relaxed? How do you choose to be inspired? Oh, I don't have time to be inspired. I don't have time to do things that I love. Like, and, you know, there's a lot of like, kind of eye rolls, to be honest. Not saying all the women, no, just certain, there's certain little elements of pushback from the community as a whole when we try to provide solutions to excess stress. And I think it's important to talk about that, because it living the kind of lifestyle where you actually are accountable to your own stress, regardless of what's happening around you, like it's a choice, right? It's not something that you just develop and all of a sudden you wake up and you say, oh, I get it now. No, it's not like that. It's like you constantly, regardless of what's coming towards you and being thrown at you every day, you make a choice where you say, I'm not going to live my life where the circumstances around me dictates how I'm going to be or how I'm going to show up. That's a really, really big life decision. I think that's one of the main pillars of why you and I have found, you know, longevity in running Wags of SCI, but also longevity in our working relationship and our friendship, is that we take radical responsibility for ourselves, right? We don't outsource it to others or make other people in charge of our happiness or blame our partners for our periods of misery, right? I feel kind of alone in that, to be honest, sometimes. I don't know about you, Elena, but like, not for with you, because you're the like one person that, you know, we can talk about this openly, but like just in general in society, it is very lonely in thinking that way, because it's so much easier to blame your lack of inspiration and your lack of happiness. Because to me, inspiration is happiness, but like to blame that on your circumstances and get mad when people say, well, you should look at your perspective, you should look at your attitude, because, you know, it is the truth when you say that your external circumstances do not dictate your reality on the inside. But I guess you have to come there in your own way, right? But do you feel like there's some level of pushback on you personally in your own life, Elena?
I think that you make a really good point about what is the quote? 10% of your experience is what is actually happening to you, and 90% is how you would like to deal with it. And it sounds easier said than done. Even in my own life, I would never say, oh, I'm perfect, and you know, 10% is just the experience, and I never get stressed and I never get frustrated, because that's not true. We're humans with a lot of emotions. We are on this planet having a human experience, which is encompassing of all emotions. And I think the responsibility piece there is being able to regulate that and being able to, like you said, take that radical responsibility for your response to situations. And hey, especially in this life, every day is like a box of chocolates, right? You never know what you're going to get, which is the very truth. I mean, our partners could be experiencing all sorts of secondary conditions on the daily with this injury, with this life. There are accidents that happen. There's physical pain that can occur. There's emotional pain that can occur. There could be a relationship, you know, relationship hardships, I want to say, or arguments or disagreements, or how is the morale in the house, depending how your partner is feeling. But at the end of the day, you do have to be able to take a step back and ask yourself, how is it that I want to participate in this or not? So I do see from the overall, from running this group, that it can be extremely, very difficult to take responsibility, because that's what overwhelm does to the body. You're not thinking clearly, or sorry, to the brain and the body. You're not thinking clearly. And those are some of the worst times to make any real decisions is when you're under high stress. And this life can present that. Any life and every life can present high stress, but especially those really sudden, quick situations, like let's say partners falling out of wheelchairs and you're running to the rescue. Things are, your partner drops something. Yesterday we were making dinner for my family when they were coming over, and Dan was using the mandolin, for example, and all I heard was like a big scream, and I ran into the kitchen and he sliced right through his nail. So of course my heart rate goes up, and I'm thinking, I'm seeing blood dripping everywhere, and I'm thinking, oh God, emergency, what is happening? But also what I'm thinking about is how long that injury is going to take to heal, because he has paralysis in his hands. So these are, again, these are all encompassing situations we have to think about. But again, being able to ground yourself in like, what is actually happening? What are the facts that I know right in this moment? How do I keep myself cool, calm, and collected, or not, or letting it out and then realizing, sort of gauging the seriousness of the situation and realizing that it's going to be okay. And we don't always need to be in that like trauma response, that sort of PTSD response of, oh my God, the world is over. Oh my God, this is awful. And that can be extremely challenging to navigate and takes forever to master. And I think we're all, every story that I've ever read on WAGS of SCI from every woman on the private group is, how do we balance? How do we get to that center of balance between experiencing high stress to being able to navigate our own emotions to keeping our cool overall? Right. So,
yeah, for sure. And I feel like, I mean, this is just some unsolicited advice to people who are listening. If you continue to say, oh, my state is that person's responsibility, or I can get fixed from this outside source, or I can put, you know, all my eggs in one basket of something that is outside of myself in order to make myself regulated, you're just going to delay your healing even further. As someone who used to do that a lot and kind of blame the other, or you know, say this is this person's job, or I don't want to look at this. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past on the podcast a lot, but it really is a choice, a daily choice. Like they always say, oh, being in a marriage is hard. Being in a relationship is hard. Well, being in a relationship with yourself is also very hard. And it requires waking up every day and making the same choice every day, no matter how hard things get, to be accountable to yourself and responsible to yourself and not get anybody else involved in your reactions and choices and decisions. And it bubbles over into everything that you do. And it's not just one day you want to make a choice in that direction and then the rest of your life you're making poor choices. It's like, no, it's you strive to do this every single day. And you're going to find a lot of success doing this, because that is the healing journey, in my opinion. That is the journey of it. Like, it turns into a spiritual process. It turns into knowing yourself more. And for me, that's the point of life. So that's why I always say, like, I can't thank my partner enough for getting injured, literally, because this created so many opportunities for him and for myself, and just our ways of looking at the world in a different way, and at looking at ourselves in a different way. So that's another silver lining of having a catastrophic injury, when you decide that you don't want to be a victim of it, right?
Yeah, you know what's interesting about that? Last night we were getting ready for bed, and Dan and I were looking at what we were looking at. Oh, we were talking about different places we would like to travel once he is completely done school, once he graduates with his therapist of recreation degree, and you know, the bit of freedom that we'll have after that. And we were talking about all the things we want to do, and Dan found, what was it? I think he found somewhere in Austria, he found this property of land. It just came up and I don't know where it came up, somewhere in our emails or something, this property of land, and it was like 8 kilometers by 8 kilometers of space. And then he said, you know, well, that could have been a possibility. Like, we're just kind of dreaming. We're not saying we're moving here. We're just dreaming and exploring these things. And he says, you know, that could have been a possibility if I didn't get injured. I think I said something to the tone of, I can't imagine, you know, I complain about being a caregiver now. I can't imagine having a property of land that's 8 by 8 kilometers and how much work that would be on top of everything else that happens here in our teeny tiny apartment, 2-bedroom apartment here in Vancouver. And that's what he said. He was like, you know, he's like, well, if I wasn't injured, maybe we could do that. And then we both sort of looked at each other and I was like, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. We wouldn't even be thinking about these things. We wouldn't necessarily even be here in this position having these discussions, these conversations. So you have to, no matter, you know, it's difficult because, of course, I don't ever wish spinal cord injury actually on anybody, including my partner. There's a lot of difficulties with it. Have we changed? Have couples changed in general going through this? Absolutely. It challenges you to the core. But had you not, had things not lined themselves up exactly as they are, you would not be in the position physically in the place you are today, having the conversations you're having today. So it's kind of interesting when you sort of take a step back and trail it all back to how things went and why, and how it's opened up more space within you, within yourself, to be able to have different thoughts, more maybe deeper, more meaningful, more spiritual, I guess, in a way, spiritual thoughts about the reason why you're still here, the reason why our partners did survive, the reasons why we are the caregivers, the reasons why, had our partners not had the injuries, you and I would have never met and this group would have never existed, for example. So I like to keep that perspective quite fresh in my mind, that everything is exactly as it should be, even though some of those days are extremely challenging, that everything is exactly as it is for a reason. So I hope that inspires some of you, if you're not feeling tremendously inspired today, is just realizing that everything as it is for a reason. But finding those reasons in it, I think, is what pushes you to the next step of your healing journey, which is extremely important.
For sure. And I think just in general, people just have this like distorted view. And I think, you know, there's many causes. We could, you know, do a whole 10 podcasts on this as to like the reasons why people have a distorted view of what their reality should be like and what their daily life should be like. It's so disordered to the fact that people are so brainwashed to thinking that things should be easy. Things should be, life should not have traumas. Life should not have difficulties or illnesses or injuries. Like, people think that that is not the way. But if you do some research and some reading into like all the great masters, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, the Bible, you know, there's lots of like Hindu doctrines and all this stuff, the Tao, like all of this stuff, you can look into all of it. Buddhism, they all acknowledge the fact that life is a certain degree of suffering, and it's your attitude around it that makes the difference. And it doesn't matter what your situation is, you'll always think someone else has it better. And that person that you think has it better than you will always wish for something different as well. It's all relative. And that is just the human experience. So I feel like, you know, as soon as you accept where you are and how perfect it is, the faster you can move through that and be able to get to a place where you are okay with things as they are, right? That doesn't mean you're happy with everything. No, that's not what that means. That just means you're willing to accept it and move through it. And that to me is what spinal cord injury has taught me. That is to me what inspiration is, moving through difficult times with ease. And however you get that, you know, go down the rabbit hole within yourself. You can find it in many different ways, right? But yeah, that was a really, really good card. I'm glad that we did that at the start of the podcast. I think that really inspired me.
It is not often that we do them, but when we do, we do them.
Well, I think it's a good podcast to do this on, because we are doing a Q&A podcast today where we are going to answer some questions that have been asked of us over the past few weeks. We like doing this because this gives just an insight into not just awareness, but education around spinal cord injury and caregiving, and also just our perspective of how we would deal with certain situations. So these are some questions that have come in via our various outlets this past few weeks. And we're going to just spend a few minutes on each question, and hopefully you can resonate with some of them. And hopefully this gets your, you know, mind flowing and your juices flowing. So the first question is, how to handle health issues when your partner's doctors have no solutions. And I think this is a good one to start off with, because I notice a trend that is happening right now in the group, in my private life, in friends' lives, in relatives' lives, where a lot of doctors are letting people down, meaning that they don't have the solutions they're looking for. They can't solve the problems that, you know, either the partner's in pain or the caregiver's in pain, or something is going on where they can't get a diagnosis, or they can't even get in to see their doctor, or they just have no answers for them, right? And as someone myself who, if you know me and know my history, I had that happen to me when I was 2 years old. So I've spent my entire life knowing that doctors don't have the answers. So like, it's kind of interesting to see this happening right now, because I'm like, wow, this is going to be the catalyst for change for so many people when they realize that doctors, while they're great in various aspects, like surgical procedures and putting things back together, they're great at that, right? But they don't have the answers for a lot of things. And we're seeing that right now. So what would you say, Elena, if someone had an issue, your partner, for instance, and they had no solution, the doctors had no solution, what's your advice? Like, let's just say your partner is injured or has something wrong with him. And this kind of stuff happens every week on the private group where they're like, doctors have no answers for him. What do I do? What is your advice?
Well, just a quick background on this topic is that we are going through this. Dan is going through this right now and has been for the past 9 months, I want to say, where he's been having excruciating pain in his back. He's got spasms all night long where the whole bed is vibrating, shaking. We've had a lot of loss of sleep. We've had a lot of canceled plans. We missed a big family wedding this past weekend because he just can't see himself getting on a flight to go and spend, you know, maybe the entire time in a hotel room being in excruciating pain. So for us, it was easier to not do that, to not, you know, risk it all and stay home in the comfort of our home where he's got his bed, he's got his recliner, he's got his standing frame, he's got his leg bike, he has his gym, he has, you know, we live in an accessible area. So it takes away a lot of that guessing. But I will, I'll definitely echo that it's been a lot of frustration with a lot of time spent without answers. Many, many x-rays, many, you know, scans, bone density scan, MRIs, CT scans, all sorts of scans, all the scans you can think of. And these exams to get in to see your doctor take quite a while. It takes months to even see a specialist for a lot of these things. Even his physiatrist does not have any answers. Now they're throwing out that he needs to do a nerve blocker, a steroid shot to block some nerves. Maybe it's a bulged disc. Maybe it's arthritis. Maybe it's this or that. It becomes extremely painful, right? You're the partner there. So you're standing by watching this without any solutions. In our case, specifically, I would say the last 9 months, I have seen Dan, I've seen him become more open to alternative medicine. I've seen him become more open to alternative remedies, really. Like if the physicians just don't have the answers, I think that's a perfect time to take things into your own hands by doing your own research, and which can also be extremely dangerous. Obviously, you know, everybody's very familiar with WebMD. Do not put your symptoms into WebMD, because the results are you're dying. Your life is now over. You need to amputate a leg or some really ridiculous results. So you have to be very skillful at sifting through the information that you come across. But I mean, what else do you do? You have to also, I guess he's come to a lot of acceptance, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, you know, avoiding things that are going to cause more harm, potential harm. It's calculated risk at what you can participate in, what you can't, but also seeing that as a sign that those are the things you're not meant to participate in. Maybe missing family events was exactly the way it was supposed to go. But also not feeling guilty and taking care of yourself first and foremost. I know that it can feel really awful to feel like you're missing out because of your medical conditions, which physicians do not have answers to, but also take that as an opportunity to do something completely different. And don't feel guilty, don't feel shameful, don't feel, you know, FOMO. And just sort of ride the wave with what information you have at hand. But always, always, always remember to put yourself first and take care of yourself first and foremost, whatever that looks like.
Yeah, for sure. Good advice. And let's quickly go back to, like, you know, at the start of the Q&A thing, I said, you know, doctors are really good at some things and really bad at other things. I think getting to that place is the most important thing. Like, if someone were to ask me this right now, like, oh, what's your advice if the doctors don't have answers? I think getting to a place where you understand that doctors are human, they're limited. I think, you know, there's a few studies that came out that said that Western medicine is about 50 years behind current research. They are humans at the end of the day. They're very educated humans, of course, but they're educated in a certain paradigm. And people are conditioned to believe that, you know, because Western medicine is the dominant medicine in our world today, that it is the only way and it is the way to go, right? So what happens is, like, you get answers, like, you know, let's just say your husband has symptoms or your partner has symptoms. The best course of action is to just go to a Western medicine doctor, get the blood work done, get the scans done, make sure that it's all clear, make sure that there's nothing, you know, that is causing this and that it's not physical. That's what they're great at, right? They're great at showing you on a platter, okay, this is what your symptoms present. And if there's nothing wrong, that's when people get so kind of terrified, because they're like, well, you guys are supposed to have the answers. So I think, like, you need to get to a place where you're like, okay, they don't necessarily have all the answers. They're very, very good at top-down interventions. But what happened? What happens when the actual issue is not something that needs a top-down intervention? What if the issue needs a bottom-up intervention, right? And that's where alternative medicines come in. And there are MDs out there that are functional medicine doctors that actually understand root cause approaches, not top-down approaches, but root cause approaches. And you can literally, that they're in every city, functional medicine doctors, they're MDs and they're certified and they're licensed and they're still Western medicine. They just believe in root cause approaches, right? So, like, getting to that place where you're like, okay, this, we've done all the tests, they can't find what's wrong. He's still having symptoms. No, we're not crazy. His body needs something. To get to that place is huge in itself, because a lot of people don't get there. They just keep going down these roads where they just keep getting more tests and more drugs and it's not helping and it's not doing anything and they're just getting sicker and sicker. But yeah, like, just to clarify, Western medicine does serve a purpose 100%. It's just sometimes the top-down approach is not what the body needs. I would argue most of the time it's not what the body needs, especially when you have a spinal cord injury, right? So yeah, if anyone wants to hear anything else from us about that or has any questions about alternative therapies and needs some help, you can always email us anytime. We're around, right? So let's get to the second question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think before we move on, in 9 months to get to that state is a lot better than getting there 25 years down the road,
right,
when you've become a pincushion and a guinea right. pig.
And not listening to your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very personal journey, but it is one worth taking.
Yeah.
So the following question we had is, what is your best advice for stubbornness when your partner won't listen or get help when needed? So that is also a very real scenario where it's really hard to come to a point of realization that you do need intervention or you do need a second opinion and you do need to see a physician, which is equally important to go make an appointment, go see your physiatrist, go get some sort of, I guess, get somebody to dig around and find some sort of diagnosis. It doesn't have to mean that you're making it true, but to be able to go and have things looked at before they escalate is also extremely important. For example, if your partner suspects a pressure sore, it is extremely important for you to go to the hospital and have it checked out and see what your options are. And this is where I think, Brooke, this is where you and I believe that there is a great and healthy mix of seeing both a TCM and an MD, right? You need to have the two. You need to have as many opinions as possible. It's very important to see your physiatrist so you have the opinions, so you have the information at hand. We are not doctors. Your partner does have a very serious injury that does need to have a lot of care and a lot of hands on deck to have an idea of what's going on. So what do you do? What do you do? What is the best advice that you can give for stubbornness when your partner won't listen or get the help that is needed? Or is this even an event that occurs in your house?
Well, I mean, there was a lot of posts on the private group this last month about kind of how our partners behave when they're frustrated or when they're just being bullheaded and saying, I can push through this. I can keep pushing. My husband doesn't do that. He kind of like got to a place very early on in his injury where he was like, okay, like I don't really know what I'm doing and I'm going to just keep following my heart and following my, you know, more holistic way of doing things. And he hasn't really encountered that many medical issues, but I can tell you one thing, when he scraped his butt on the side of his wheelchair transferring in Italy and he had an avulsion wound, the doctor is the first person we went to and they sent us to an Italian specialist who basically gave us some gels and told us how to dress a pressure wound. And it was very, very, we learned so much from that. We learned how the body heals and what to do when you have an issue like that come up. Because let's face it, like you said earlier, spinal cord injuries are very serious and they have a lot of other things like skin wounds that need to be attended to. And you can't necessarily attend to them with alternative holistic methods of medicine, right? So I know in the group, having stubborn partners, it's a very, very common thing. We, like I said earlier, we have posts about this all the time where they're so stubborn, they won't listen. And the WAG just gets to a point where she's just like, well, I guess I can't do anything anymore. He's going to have to learn the hard way. My thing, kind of like what I would say to that is, his decisions, especially if you're a caregiver, his choices to be stubborn and not attend to things, it directly impacts you in the long term, whether you want to believe it or not. Because if he's down with a pressure wound that could have been avoided, you're going to have to pick up the extra slack. If he's injured and his seating position was off for so many years and now he has scoliosis, it's going to mean extra care when he's older. And I know, you know, it's not a selfish way of thinking. You're in a partnership with someone. Like you are ultimately partners in this life. And that means that each of your decisions impact the other person. So especially when you're in a caregiving position. So I guess that would be my advice to, you know, we don't want to be nagging, but we also want to have them understand that your choices and decisions directly impact me, whether it's now or in the future. And you can't see what's going to happen, right? Nobody can see what's going to happen. So being like cautious and getting things taken care of before they get too bad is a big thing in our community. And even when it comes to like couples that have nurses, like the nurses don't pay attention like you do. There's so many posts from women that are like, I found this on my partner's butt and the nurse didn't see it for weeks. And then I didn't see it and I found it. And, you know, there's a lot of instances where that happens too. And, don't discredit yourself. Don't discredit yourself. Don't say, oh, I'm going to stay out of it all the time. Like these kind of things will impact you, right? Especially the ones like the skin wounds and the muscle wounds and the poor posture, all of that is going to turn into something and fast, right? So,
well, yeah. And, you know, now listening to you say that, it just reminds me of how lived experience contributes to the WEGs of SCI in our community is becoming the experts. You end up noticing, noticing a lot of things that need extra care, need extra attention. So this is a very true lived experience. But to move on to the next question. Yeah. So to move on to the next question, and I'm going to ask you this because we actually don't have any experience with this question whatsoever. Dan does not sweat and he doesn't have, he just doesn't have any experience with this. And the next question is, how do you combat SWAS in this summer? So how, for anybody unfamiliar with the term SWAS, if your partner sweats sitting in their cushion, getting extra moisture around their legs or butt, their groin region, I've seen this come up a few times in the private group, to be honest. And so this is a situation. And especially when your partner doesn't necessarily have the feeling in those areas, but can feel, can see secondary symptoms of like AD present themselves because they've been so uncomfortable for a while. How do you combat these symptoms, Brooke?
Well, just to elaborate on what you said earlier too about like learned wisdom. It's so funny because I see some posts online where it's like, well, I'm going to ask the wise women in the WEGs group what they do because I can't get any answers elsewhere. And they always have just the best solutions. So like, I don't know, like I love the group for that because some, like we said before, some women don't even have access to doctors or nurses in their area. So they have to rely on the group for certain things. So it's really cool. But it's really cool.
Especially women in like remote communities, which is
yes.
And there's been a very strong correlation between remote communities and the lack of being able to get a family doctor, being able to go see a specialist, to get into a clinic to see any sort of physician. Is there a clinic in your area? How far do you have to drive? Do you have access to these things? I mean, even fertility, right? We had this conversation about fertility and a lot of women utilizing the information that we got from the sexual health clinicians here in Vancouver, British Columbia, made a podcast over that. And that's how a lot of women got their free information. So yeah, the group is pretty phenomenal. These are the experts. They are the girls that know what's up.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, sweaty ass. So this is a really good opportunity for education because especially for people that are listening that are friends or family members of someone with an SCI, summer months are the worst for this, but it can creep up on you. So like a lot of like your partner, Dan, like a lot of people don't sweat at all below their level of injury. That's very common, but it is also very common to have condensation and sweat in folds, like in your groin or underneath your butt, in areas that are covered or that are warm, and that builds up over time, especially if you're not moving as much, you have a higher level injury, or you could just be a sweater. Like you could have sweat glands down there. It's worse in the summer for sure. But like combating that is something that not many people know you have to, because everyone just thinks that automatically if you have an STI, you don't sweat at all. That's not true. There was, you know, this question has been posted on the group many, many times, but for us in our life, I didn't realize it was an issue until a year or two in, when, you know, I would notice some dampness down there and I would think that it was an accident, but it actually wasn't. It was just the sweat that builds between like the balls and the leg. And the danger of letting this go on for too long is it's not just moisture. You can acquire like fungal infections, just like jock itch, in those areas. And so it's really important to like be proactive and prevent that from happening. So I know a lot of women put things like cotton between the balls and the inside of the leg, that some absorbent fabric that helps absorb. Someone was actually commented and said they use lemon juice, like dabbing lemon juice on, or some sort of an astringent to kind of dry that area up. which is, that's interesting. I've never tried that. But for us, from my husband's a C4 quad, and what we have used is the best thing that we've found is a very high percentage zinc cream. So we have, of course, a natural one that we get in Canada that's made in Quebec. You can get it on Amazon. It has all natural essential oils, but it has a very, very high content of zinc in it. So 40% and above. I found when I was first diving into this that the creams with the 10% and the 20%, they don't do the best job at preventing wetness. They just give a barrier. My thing was, I want to prevent wetness from happening, and zinc is a great way to do that. So you basically, after the shower, you make sure that those areas are completely dry, and then you put a very thin layer of high zinc cream in those areas, and it actually prevents the wetness from building up at all. But again, you have to make sure that there's no fungus there or anything first, because you might need an antifungal cream or prescription strength antifungal cream. But that literally will prevent sweaty balls, sweaty cracks, sweaty all the places that don't see the sunshine. A thin layer of high percentage zinc with some oils in there will do really well. I know there's a brand called Destin, and it's available on Amazon.com, and it's like more of a mainstream zinc cream with a very high percentage of zinc in it. And the zinc does the job for sure. And yeah, you can put it all everywhere, and it's actually really good for the body.
That's good. That's good to know. So for anybody who didn't catch that, what is the brand called again?
The brand is called Destin, and it's okay. Like literally available at Target and Amazon and everywhere. And it has a 40% zinc in there, which is, it is actually quite hard to find. So, we tried prescription ones. We tried, ones from a medical supplier, and they just weren't very good. They were too oily. They had other stuff in there like chemicals. So if you want a natural one, you can email us. I'm not sure of the brand. But if you are interested, wagsofsci@gmail.com, and I will look that up for you if you want something more natural.
Nice. Thank you for sharing that. So moving to a completely different topic, from SWAS to anger and resentment. We've had this topic pop up so many times, well, like every other topic we're discussing today, but this can be tricky to navigate. And the question is, anger and resentment in this life is so real. What to do if your partner takes it out on you? And that is really, really, it's very real. We've seen, which is actually kind of interesting, like when I bring up this topic with friends, just sort of as a very vague topic of anger and resentment and frustration. And I feel like a lot of people are quite surprised to learn that the person in the chair is the one who's doing the anger and frustration. And we've had this topic escalate to some very unsafe levels, where we always say, seek help and support. If you are in an abusive relationship, please seek help and support and get yourself to a safe space. Of course, we hope that that is not the case for a lot of the members in our community, but number one piece of advice, get the help and support you need. If you cannot find the help and support you need and you feel you are in an abusive relationship, please reach out to us and we will do our best, along with our partner, Robin Wishart with Wishart Brain and Spine Law, to make sure that you are in a safe space. But
for sure,
the overall let's say that you're dealing with more relationship issues, such as expressing of anger, frustration because of the injury, and your partner is feeling frustrated because they are in discomfort and pain and they are not getting any solutions from their physiatrist, and they are just kind of at their wit's end because they're missing out on everything, or they feel like they're missing out on everything. What to do when your partner feels this way, Brooke?
Well, just to elaborate on what you said, I think professional help is something that is very, very necessary, especially in this injury. And I was freaking shocked out of my mind when I learned at the start of my partner's injury that they would only be helped with therapy if they were suicidal. I mean, this is the system for you, right? It fails you in all the areas that you want it to succeed in, right? And I think going to a psychologist or a counselor to process these big emotions that very often, especially with men, get repressed. Now, imagine years on end being in a spinal cord injury, being in a chair where you can't really release the hormones, the internalized shame, the frustration and anger that's been building up in your body from just being in a wheelchair and how the world isn't set up for that, and not being able to physically release that pent up energy for men is huge. And there are different techniques that you can do to prevent the buildup from happening. Like if you have a spinal cord injury, from ejaculation to lion breathing and different kind of pranayama techniques that you don't have to move in order to facilitate the energy moving. However, that's more of a proactive approach. If you're in a situation where the anger keeps bubbling over and you're being emotionally abused by your partner because he's not dealing with his own feelings and his pent-up frustration, you know, again, back to the card pull at the beginning of the podcast, right? Like, you have to take responsibility for yourself, right? You have to see that you're not inspired, and but a lot of the times they are so traumatized and they've internalized their feelings for so many years or so many months that they can't see out of that. And that's when abuse starts. And this isn't something to joke around about. This is something that we deal with all the time on our private group, where we have to direct people to help, because, you know, just because someone's paralyzed doesn't mean that they can't abuse people. And to be honest, emotional abuse is something that it's not talked about very often, but it is so, so, so severe, especially when you're in a position of a caregiver versus a partner dynamic, having to balance that. That is no joke. So I think there's a huge difference between someone who is feeling pent up anger and frustration and who have maybe had fights with your partner where it's not at the abuse level yet, but you know your partner needs some help and he knows that he needs some help. That's very different to my partner is literally, you know, ramming himself against me and throwing things at me, and mm-hmm. or he's abusing me in a way of like using my emotions against me or making me feel guilty. That's different. That's like he's not taking responsibility for himself. And that it, to me, when you get to that level where it's already happening, is like kind of like ultimatum time. It's kind of like removing yourself from the situation time, taking more drastic measures because you don't want to get involved in that cycle of abuse, right? Which comes from not dealing with your shit.
Right. Correct. Very correct. And again, it's the number one step is taking responsibility and recognizing that you are seeking support and you are seeking help. So great answer, Brooke. And I think it's one that we've probably shared so, so many times on the private group, which leaves us with the very last question that we will discuss for today's podcast. And that is, what is the best way to remove black tire marks from floors and walls and everything in between? So completely, we're going to take a completely different dive here into a totally different direction with your partner abusing the floors and walls in your home with their chair.
A different type of abuse.
Yes. Yes. Which is actually much better, but our house looks, I can't even tell you what it looks like. The doors, the walls, the counters, the everything. I mean, our floor, it sounds like I live in like a dump now, but Everything has taken a hit, including the side of my car from doing car transfers with the sliding board. Yeah. I think it's just part of life, but how do we get rid of even the toilet, right? When along this, the sides of the toilet from the commode pushing across or against it. It's the natural cycle of life when you live, I guess when you just live in a home, things will get banged up regardless. Wear and tear. Make sure.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? I think the best thing you can do is try and prevent it, but not drive yourself crazy. Like use things like childproofing plastic strips. We have a bunch of those on our baseboards.
I was just going to mention those. You sent me home with a whole bunch of those the last time I was over.
Well, yeah, because it's like you just look up on Amazon childproofing and they have ones for corners. They have strips that you can cut to any size that you can put on just like the corners of your doors where there's in high traffic areas. You can also I believe you guys have one in your bathroom door too. Like I think it's metal or plastic where it's like it makes. So then when you bam into the door, it doesn't actually hurt the door wood or the paint. You can get strips like that that are clear or metal or whatever. I know there's a lot of women on the private group that use the metal, like stainless steel panels.
We have those actually. I'm sitting recording this right now in our spare room. And we have that actually along the corners as well. You can get like the little corner ones are, I mean, they're big and metally if you don't mind the look, but it's better than having half of a wall been taken out with a power chair. Right.
Right. Which we've done like holes in, like we had one hole in like our side area. Cause it was actually the funny part is it wasn't him. It was me when I was trying to move his chair.
Right. Right. Which so happens like... to trying to navigate, trying to use a joystick to move a power chair when you're not the power chair user. You're the stander buyer trying to move the chair. I mean, it takes all sorts of navigation. Sometimes I marvel at like, you know, watching women walking down the street and they're the ones that are using the joystick to move their partners, like going for a walk. And their partner's arms are inside the chair. And then the woman's like, I'm like, how do you know how to do that? That's some skills.
Another caregiver skill. That is only recognized by us in the community.
added to your WEGS of SCI resume.
Yeah. Well, and when you think about, when you think about floors on the, rubber marks on the floors, those come off pretty easily with just like a cleaner and a wipe. But the thing is you can't drive yourself crazy trying to clean them all day long as soon as they happen. You kind of have to, like you said earlier, it's just life. Like they build up and just do the best that you can by removing them. But the only thing in my household, the only thing I've found that actually work on porcelain, the bathroom area where the commode goes, the black marks on there and then black marks on the tiles. The only thing I've found is using the sponge and the universal stone cleaner without diluting it and just rubbing it off because it's abrasive and it, but it doesn't scrape the porcelain. And then also there's those for walls, for paint, you know, what works really well is they're on Amazon. They're called Sneaker Clean. They're like little white pads. They're almost like Magic Eraser. I don't think they're exactly the same as Magic Eraser, but they're very similar in the concept. Mm-hmm. And there's a white side to it. And you basically just rub it along. We use this a lot when we travel and we kind of mark up walls. We bring one and like you just literally swipe it over the wall a couple times and it rubs right off, just the exact same as it would on shoe rubber. It works really, really well. And that's just like on Amazon, Sneaker Clean or something. They're like, comes in a pack of like five. They're orange and white. And they're just little sponges, but they work on paint.
I bet you it is. It is a magic eraser. That's probably what that is.
Yeah, except it's white. I don't know if the magic eraser is white.
They are. They're also white. And over time, they dissolve as they rub things away, right?
Right. Very similar then.
So, I mean, first of all, that's really kind of you to do that when you go traveling. to pack one along.
I don't want to leave his marks everywhere. Oh, my God.
It's like making the bed when you're checking out. Yeah. You're like, you know, this is my final hurrah.
For sure. But like, honestly, though, do you know of anything else besides repainting that works on the wall marks where there's paint? I don't. I haven't found anything.
To be honest, I'm at the stage of wanting to repaint everything.
Yeah.
Now that I'm done school for the summer, that's my big thing. I'm like, I want to repaint this place.
Yeah.
I don't do that great of a job from our last two our last two homes that we've had, I don't do the best painting job. So I have a bad track record with that. So Dan's not allowing me to do that.
Oh my God.
So I guess I better get with the magic eraser or sneaker clean right away.
Oh my God. Yeah. And if you, and honestly, if anybody's listening, like, we get so many resources from you guys. If you guys have any better ideas than what we're talking about now, please email us anytime, wagsofsci@gmail.com, about anything. If you want, if you have a question or if you have a really good solution to a problem, we love talking about this stuff because, again, this podcast will be available forever on our website for free as a resource to women just like you, just like us. And we just want it out there, right?
Yeah, 100%. So once again, thank you for spending the last hour here with us, with Brooke and Elena, with the Wags of SEI podcast. And we hope that everybody has a beautiful and safe rest of their summer. Stay moisture free with the zinc cream. Take our advice. Enjoy the heat. Enjoy the summer. Before you know it, it will be fall, which is our favorite time of year here at Wags of SEI HQ. So everybody, thank you for tuning in. Stay safe, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Wags of SEI podcast.
Cheers.